It is just a couple weeks away. Hopefully you are inviting someone, inviting your friends, family members, coworkers to be a part of that day with you. As I said last week, do not get to Easter and sit in this service thinking, I wish so-and-so were here. I wish I'd invited them. Do not let that happen. And I'm telling you, you are going to experience that if you're not inviting them. So make sure that you're inviting them to be a part of that day. If you haven't been with us for the past couple weeks, right now, we are in the midst of a conversation called freedom. And we have been looking at this incredible truth that Jesus steps into our story and says, I'm here to bring freedom. This thing that so few of us would connect with the idea of Jesus, so few of us would connect with the idea of church. Jesus says, this is what it's actually all about. This is what it's all about. We've been looking at this moment where he launches his public ministry. This moment that we see captured in Luke chapter 4, where it says, Jesus stands up and he says this. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim that the captives will be released, that the blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free, and that the time of the Lord's favor has come. He stands up and says, I'm here, just in case there's any question, I'm here to bring freedom. And I want to point something out. I mentioned it just briefly last week. I want to point something out because it's important, especially for those of you who are beginning to read through God's word. And as you encounter the things that Jesus says, it's important for you to know this. Oftentimes, as Jesus engages his followers in the conversation of what he's doing, he uses physical pictures to capture spiritual realities. He uses physical pictures to capture spiritual realities. It's exactly what he's doing in this passage as he's quoting, as he's reading this prophecy about him. This is a physical picture to capture a spiritual reality. So as he says, I've come so that the blind will see. He's not talking about physically blind. He's talking about spiritually blind. He's using a physical picture to capture spiritual reality. He does this when he talks about the poor frequently. He's not talking about, when he says, I've come to bring good news to the poor, he's not talking about physically poor, he's talking about spiritually poor. He does the same thing on the Sermon on the Mount when he said, blessed are the poor. He's not saying it's great to be poor. He's saying, no, it's great when you understand that you are poor spiritually, that you need to be given to spiritually, that you need something spiritually. When he's talking about the oppressed, he's not talking about physical oppression. He's talking about spiritual oppression and the reality that, no, we live in a spiritual oppression, and he's come to bring freedom to that. Pay very close attention to that. Jesus does that frequently. He uses physical pictures to capture spiritual realities. It's what he does with parables. He does it over and over and over and over again. Pay attention to that so you can understand what he's trying to do. To teach us. And in this passage, he says, I want to set you free spiritually. We've been looking at how he does that for the past couple weeks. If you haven't been with us, go back and watch those conversations online. It's important for you to be able to see how he sets us free, how he sets us free from guilt and shame, how we're forgiven, how he sets us free from who we used to be, how we're made new, how he gives us a new heart. The hope of the world is a new heart that impacts the external circumstances, not circumstances that impact the heart. And we talked through how he does that. We talked about how he frees us from trying to earn his acceptance and trying to earn his love. And I said something at the end of last week that made many of you very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. I told you, I said, God has never and God will never accept, love, and value anyone based on what they do. God has never and God will never accept, love, or value anyone based on what they do. And we talked about the reality that when you accept what Jesus has done for you, when you trust him, that he says, listen, you can have my goodness and I'll take your brokenness. When you accept him about the exchange that took place on the cross, that there's nothing that you can do that will make God love you less, and there's nothing that you can do to make God love you more, because God's love and value and acceptance of you is not based on what you've done, but based on what Jesus has given you. And I shared that with you last week, and we talked about this. We talked about how when we hear that, our response should be, yes, yes, this is amazing. That's how you lived your week, right? You walked into this week, yes, every day, yes, this is great. I'm loved, valued, and accepted. It doesn't have anything to do with what I do. This is amazing. No, you didn't. You know why? Because you don't believe me. And we should sit there and say, yes, but there's something inside of us that says, Not so sure about that. It sounds good, I think, but... And as we said, there's a lot of different reasons why we push back on it. Some of us want to be valuable. We want to earn it. We want to be loved more because we do better. We want God to love us more. We think we're better than other people. For some of us, we don't know how to accept that. How would I? I was talking to someone this week who's struggling to accept it, and she said, I just don't deserve it. I said, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there's something in us that says, no, you shouldn't get what you don't deserve. It's hard to accept it. Some of us want to hold on to the rules so that we can control other people. You can't control people if that's the way it works. But then there's this other objection. There's this thing inside of us that says, wait. If that's true, if my love and value and acceptance before God isn't based on what I do, then wouldn't you just do whatever you want? And some of you last week, you came to the end of the conversation, you said, if that's true, why would I even come back? Fortunately, you did. But you thought that. What? Then there's really no point in... Does it? So you're saying it doesn't matter? Well, how would that work? Or maybe you're someone who heard it and said, yeah, I told you, it doesn't matter what you do. You can live however you want. And the person sitting next to you is saying, no, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound right. How in the world would that work? And if that's true, then what guides us? And if that's true, what would our motivation possibly be? Because we don't... If we're honest, we don't really know any other motivation besides guilt and fear. And our whole lives, we've made the decisions that we've made in order to earn other people's approval, and so people will like us, and so people will accept us. If our acceptance and value is secure, what in the world would motivate us? If you haven't been with us, we've been exploring this entire conversation inside the book of Galatians. And in this letter that's written to the churches in this area called Galatia, the writer, Paul, he's talking to them about all the different ways that they're free. But one of the things that I like, and one of the things that I appreciate the most about the book of Galatians is that it spends a tremendous amount of time answering just that question. And it answers it really, really, really well. Some of us have been reading through the book every week. Some of us have been reading through a chapter of the book every week. I don't know which one you're doing. Hopefully you've begun to, or hopefully you've at least had the chance to read through it once. If you read through it, you'll see that in chapter 1 and halfway through chapter 2, he's basically saying, okay, this is why you can trust me. This is how you can know that I've experienced Jesus, and that this isn't just something that I thought up, but this is something that Jesus has given me the authority to be able to communicate to you. And he's talking about his authority. As you get to the middle of chapter 2, it then begins to shift, and he starts to break down the freedom that we've been talking about, that we've been looking at, 2 through 3 and into 4. He's saying, okay, this is what the freedom looks like. Don't lose that freedom. This is what the freedom looks like. This is how the freedom works out in your life. And he's making his argument about freedom. But then as he gets to chapter 5, he shifts again. He shifts again, and he shifts to specifically answer our question. Because he knows. He knows. If you're going to be honest about this, and if you understand what he's saying, he knows that you're going to ask that question. Anyone who has ever experienced God's grace for what it actually is has asked that question. Well, then what does it matter what I do? Did you know that Paul was actually accused of teaching people that they could do whatever they wanted? Because of the fact that he taught grace for what it is, many people said, Paul, if you keep teaching people this, they're going to do whatever they want. Why? Because you're going to have to come face to face with this question. If that's true, then why does it matter? So in chapter 5, he shifts and he says, I understand you're going to ask that question. So let me talk to you about that. And today what I want to do is to start to dive into chapter 5 so that we can see, okay, then what is it that guides us? And what is it that motivates us if this is true? Chapter 5, beginning of verse 13, it says this, "For you have been called to live in freedom." He's talking about, listen, all that I've just told you about freedom, you've been called to live in that freedom, my brothers and sisters. "But don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. For the whole law can be summed up into this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. But if you're always biting and devouring one another, watch out, beware of destroying one another." He knows the question they're going to ask. So he comes to chapter 5 and he says, okay, I've talked to you about this freedom, but here's the thing. Don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve and to love one another. And he quotes this, he quotes this, to love your neighbor as yourself, right? And he's calling us back to something that not many of us understand about Jesus. And we don't understand what Jesus has done through the way in which he's lived and through the way in which he gave his life. He's referencing back to a really intriguing conversation that Jesus has with his disciples that not many of us understand. Let me take you back to this passage. There's this really intriguing conversation that Jesus has with his disciples before he leaves them. And he says this. It's found in John chapter 13, beginning of verse 34. It says, "So now," he's sitting around with his disciples, and he says to them, he says, "So now I am giving you a new commandment." When he said that, the disciples would have gotten really excited. We're going to learn something new. We get to tell everybody something they don't know. We're going to look really smart. This is going to be awesome. Then he continues. "Okay, guys, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love each other." I have to imagine as he said that they kind of nudge one another, like, should you tell him? No, you raise your hand. I'm not, no. Tell Peter, he'll ask. Tell Peter. Wait, love each other, that's not new. "Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." He says, "I'm giving you this new commandment." And the fullness of what he's talking about there, obviously, is recognized on the cross. He said, "I don't just want you to love, I want you to love the way that I've loved you." But let me ask you a question. Why does he say it's new? I mean, yeah, he's going to take love to a whole new level, but why does he say it's new? You see, we think of it as new in terms of, okay, this is a commandment that's never been given before, or we think of it as new as something new to add on to what we already had, because we continue to make the mistake of believing that Jesus was an add-on to what came before him. We continue to make the mistake of believing that Jesus was an add-on to what came before him, even though he is constantly trying to call us out of that. And he's saying things like, listen, you can't put new wine into old wineskins. The whole thing will blow up. He's saying, guys, you can't look at me and think that I'm just an add-on to what came before. And as you read through the scriptures and you study the scriptures, you're going to see that Jesus is not an add-on or a continuation of what was before. Jesus is actually the fulfillment of one thing and the beginning of something new. He comes to fulfill the law. We talked about this last week, that he lived so that he could give you his goodness. He actually lived so that he could give you credit for fulfilling the law, for keeping it. He says, I've come to fulfill the law. I'm not here to destroy the law. I've come to fulfill it, to complete everything that God has done before, and then I'm going to start something new. I'm starting something new. I'm going to do something new. There's so much new about what Jesus does. Before it was, okay, you're going to stay together and the world's going to see me through you. He says, no, we're not going to stay together anymore. We're going to go and we're going to take this to the world. There's so much that we don't realize changes with Jesus. And Jesus says, okay, listen, when it comes to the whole law thing, I'm going to fulfill the law and then I'm starting something new. When he says new commandment, he's not saying, this isn't something that you haven't heard before. It's just the commandment for what I'm starting that's new. He says, so now guys, no. Now that we're starting this new thing, I'm going to give you the commandment. I'm going to give you the commandment for this new thing. And there's not going to be a bunch of them. There's just one of them. You love like I've loved. Before, there were a bunch of them. Not anymore. I fulfilled that. Now we're doing this new thing. I'm going to give you a new commandment. Here's a new commandment. I want you to love the way that I loved you. And he changes the whole paradigm. Because before, there were all of these rules and all of these different commandments. There's this whole law. And there's this box. And there's this fence, right? And it says, okay, listen, this is what God wants you to do. Don't step outside the box. You know what happens when you create a box? And you put people in it, they try to get out of the box. That's what they do. As a matter of fact, the scriptures say the law was given so that we'd realize this about ourselves, that we'd realize our brokenness. My sons were this way. Still to this day, they very much are. We recently moved to a new home. The first thing that they did as soon as they got into that home is they tested all the walls. They test them at full speed, literally, boom. I don't know what it is. It's just something about it. That's just the way it is. When my sons were little and you put them in a crib, the first thing they did, shake everything. Like, all right, what's holding me? And before there's all, okay, this is the box, stay in the box. You've experienced this with religion. Once you establish a box, everything is arguments about what the box looks like. And it's like, well, I think this is right. Well, I think this is right, too, so I'm going to expand. My box is bigger than your box. My box is a little bit bigger than your box. And there's all these arguments about what the box looks like. And the Pharisees had given their entire lives to defining the box. Like, no, this is the line. And all of the conversations were about what's right or what's wrong. And Jesus says, with the new thing that we're doing, that's not the way it's going to work. It's not about a box. It's about the pursuit of something. We're going somewhere. We're not just staying somewhere. We're going somewhere. And that what's going to guide us is not this conversation, right or wrong. No. We're taking it to a different level. What's going to guide us is that the best way to love? What's going to guide us is that the most loving thing that I can do? In my relationship with my wife, it's not about what's right or wrong. I frequently have conversations with people who are doing unloving things, but they say there's nothing wrong with it. Some of you have had that conversation where you've said, yeah, I understand it's not loving, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's not against the rules. Jesus says, no, we don't work that way anymore. I'm doing away with the box. I realized earlier today this was probably the wrong shirt to wear for this conversation. We're doing away with the box. And it's going to be about love. And that doesn't lower
the bar. It actually raises the bar. This is why Jesus, he says some things that sometimes we look at and say, wait a second, is that true? If you've never said that about what Jesus says, you probably haven't read what Jesus says. Or you're just being dishonest with yourself. There are times where he says these things like, you guys, you're all obsessed with murder, but if you hate your brother, it's just as bad as murder. Is that true? Wait. Because hate is just inside the line on my box, but murder's way out here. You guys are all obsessed with adultery, but if you lust, it's just as bad. What is he doing? He's destroying the box. He's saying, no, we're not going to work that way anymore. We're going to work off of, and we're going to be guided by, what is most loving. That's why the scriptures say, if you know the right thing and you don't do it, it's wrong. It's not just about not doing wrong. It's about loving. This is what's going to guide us. The question that we're going to ask is not what, okay, right, wrong. No. The question we're going to ask is this the best way to love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength? Anything short of that, I will not settle for. Is this the best way to love the people around me the way that Jesus loved me? Anything short of that, I will not settle for. Well, is it right or wrong? Doesn't matter. It's not what guides me. What guides me is the pursuit of love with all that I have. He says, okay, I've talked to you about freedom. We've walked through this freedom, but don't use it. Don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Use your freedom to actually experience what Jesus has called you into. Use your freedom to experience the life that Jesus died for you to be able to know. Use your freedom to be able to love the way that Jesus has loved you. This is what guides us. But then he starts to talk about also what motivates us. What guides us now is not the box. No. What guides us is love. We want to love as best as we possibly can. And then he starts to talk about, well, then what motivates us in that love? What moves us to that love? A couple of verses later, Galatians chapter 5, verse 17. The sinful nature wants to do evil, which is just the opposite of what the Spirit wants. And the Spirit gives us desires that are the opposite of what the sinful nature desires. These two forces are constantly fighting each other, so you're not free to carry out your good intentions. And he starts to talk to them about something all of us have experienced, where you're in that moment, and you know the right thing to do. You just don't want to do it. I know the right thing to do. I just don't care. Or you're in that moment and there are these two things going back and forth inside of you. We've experienced it so much that we make cartoons about it. And there's the good angel and the bad angel. And they're going back and forth and whispering these things. All of us have experienced this. And he's talking to them about that. And he says, your sinful nature, it wants to use your freedom to just satisfy its own urges. He says, but there's this other side that the Spirit is speaking into. And the two of them are at war with one another. But you see, there's a huge mistake that we make in the midst of this. And he's calling them to understand something about themselves. He says, what guides us is love. And he says, when you begin to pursue that, you're going to experience something. You're going to experience your sinful nature calling you in one direction. And then this other voice that calls you in a different direction. And it says, you have to understand which one you are. I remember very clearly the moment that I saw this. I had learned this truth many times in my life. Some of you have learned this before, but you haven't seen it yet. It's that idea of the blind being able to see. I remember very clearly the moment when I actually believed this. What he's trying to help them to see in this passage. I had just come out of high school, and late in my high school, I had begun to drink pretty heavily, and I was running with a crowd that was pretty involved in that. But I had come to the point where I realized I've got to get out of this. I was underage. I realized that it was leading to all sorts of really destructive things in my life, and I said, I've got to walk away from this. It's got to end. And I remember being in a conversation with God where I just knew, like, okay, it has to end now. I walked out of that conversation, and I went to my grandparents, and I told them what I was doing, because I had learned long ago that if you just tell yourself, it doesn't matter, you're not going to actually do it. So I went to people that, one, I knew I would be really embarrassed to tell about what was happening, and I knew would really help me to be able to do what God had called me to do. And the next day, my friend comes to me and says, guess what, Chris? I said, what? He said, this is amazing. You're not going to believe it. I said, what? He said, my cousin is getting married this weekend, and he's invited us to the wedding, and we're going to be able to drink whatever we want. And it's all free. I said, God, we got to wait a week on this. I went back and forth, but I finally decided, no, I'm going to stick to what I said I was going to do. And I went to the wedding, and afterwards the reception started, and I watched all my friends. And as I watched, it got harder and harder and harder. I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget it. And it got to the point where it hurt. It hurt. And I said, I got to get out of here. And I left. And I went to my grandparents' house. It was a little after 1 o'clock in the morning. I woke my grandfather up. He comes out and he sits down at the kitchen table. And I explained to him what had happened, and I explained to him what's going on. I said, listen, I just want to go back. I just want to get drunk. And he looked at me and he said, no, you don't. I said, maybe I didn't explain it right. Yes, I do. He looked at me again. No, you don't. I literally said to him, I know you don't drink, so you probably can't understand what I'm going through right now. So I really, really, really want to go back. And he looked at me, and he said, no, you don't, or you wouldn't be here. And he stood up, and he went back to bed. He literally did. Just said that, stood up, and went back to bed. And I'm just sitting there by myself at the table. For those of you who know me, you think I'm direct. You should have met my grandfather. But in that moment, he taught me this passage. He taught me what God's trying to help the Galatians to understand. And that is this. You find yourself in the midst of these circumstances, in these moments where there's this battle happening. You're associating with the wrong voice. You think that you're the voice that wants to walk away from God. He said, you need to understand, because of the fact that you've been made new, who you actually are is the voice that wants to follow God. Who you actually are is the voice that wants to love. For most of my life, I thought that I had to overcome myself. I thought that I was the voice that wanted to choose selfishness. I thought that I was the voice that wanted to walk away. But in that moment, my grandfather spoke into my heart with this reality that, no, Chris, you are the one who wants to do what is right. And what you actually want most is to follow. What you actually want most is to love. You see, when Jesus makes you new from the inside out, who you are in that conversation changes. And Paul's calling him to the reality that, listen, you still have your sinful nature. You still have your flesh. He changed your heart. He changed who you are. You're born again from the inside out, but you still have your sinful nature. And that flesh, as the scriptures frequently call it, that flesh still has its old cravings, and it still has its old desires, and it still has its old urges, but that's not who you are. Who you are is that reborn heart that's in there that says, no, I want to love like him. That heart that beats like his heart, that's who you actually are. And for those of you who are here and you have not yet trusted Jesus, you haven't asked him to make you new, he can do that in your life today. And he wants for you not just to be forgiven, but for you to be given a heart that longs for love. Longs to be able to love him and love the people around him the way that you have been loved by him. But for many of us, we continue to associate with the wrong voice. And he says one of the primary motivations in why we do what we do is not that we're earning God's approval, it's that this is who you actually are. And this is what you actually want. Now, it's hard for us to believe that because for some of us, our flesh is much stronger than our spirit. The scriptures say that we constantly live in this situation where we get to choose which of these two we're going to feed. And if you feed your flesh, if you consistently feed your flesh by giving into your appetites, by just doing what feels good, but if you continue to feed your flesh with the things that you expose yourself to, or you continue to feed your flesh by not being careful with who it is that you're closest to in your life, if you continue to feed your flesh, don't be surprised if that voice is loudest in the conversation. Don't be surprised by that. One of the reasons why God says be careful with who you surround yourself with, one of the reasons why God says be careful with what you expose yourself with to, is because he says, no, that feeds your flesh, and it allows it to become louder and louder and louder, and you begin to believe that that's who you are because it's loudest. He says, don't feed that. Feed your spirit. When you're here on Sunday, it feeds your spirit. When you're inside a dinner group in community like that, it feeds your spirit. When you're surrounded by people whose hearts also are longing for and pursuing God, it feeds your spirit. When we engage God in prayer, it feeds our spirit. When we memorize God's word, it feeds our spirit. I had a mentor in my life who was remarkable at this. And he constantly, every time he saw that longing in me for what was good, he encouraged it and he built into it. And what he did in my life over and over again is he fed my spirit and fed it and fed it and fed it and fed it until it became much louder than the other voice. Your flesh is never going to go away, but you can diminish its voice. One of the reasons why we practice fasting in our rhythms is because fasting diminishes the voice of the flesh. It teaches the flesh, listen, I'm in control of you, you're not in control of me, and you are not who I am. It feeds your spirit. And Paul's saying, no, what guides us is love. What guides us is love, and what we're pursuing is love. Don't use this freedom. Don't use this freedom to give your flesh the ability to take over. Use this freedom to be who you actually long to be. And understand that that's the real you. That's the real you. Our first motivation that he teaches us is that this is who we actually are. Now, my plan today was to walk you through all four of the motivations that he teaches in Galatians chapter 5. I realized in our first message that we were not going to get there. As we move through the next couple of weeks, we're going to continue to build on this because this is just the first motivation that he gives us. It's just the first. Let me take you to the passage that we're going to start off with next week. A little bit earlier in Galatians, he says this, Galatians chapter 3. Let me ask you this one question. Did you receive the Holy Spirit by obeying the law of Moses? Of course not. It's back when he's breaking down the idea that you're going to be accepted, valued, or loved by God by what you do. He said, no, you didn't receive the Holy Spirit by obeying the law of Moses. You received the Spirit because you believed the message you heard about Christ. How foolish can you be after starting your Christian lives in the Spirit? Listen to what he says. Why are you now trying to become perfect by your own human effort? He says, what guides us is love. Our motivation is who we are. But even as he's talking to us about our nature, what does he say? He's saying the Spirit is speaking into that nature. The Spirit is speaking into that nature. And he says, we don't actually do this by trying harder. Then how? That's what we're going to talk about next week. Will you pray with me? Father, I ask that you would do what only you could do. Spirit, this is not something that we learn. It's not something that I can teach. It's something that only you can teach. I pray for those who are here who maybe for the very first time are realizing that they've been loved in this way. And Father, I know that this is a lot to be able to take in for those who are just seeking and trying to figure out what this looks like. But I pray that the power of your truth, the power of your truth and your love would draw them to you. If you are here today and you're trying to process what Jesus has done, I know that what we talked about today is a lot. But here's the thing. I think you want something real. I think that what you long for is not just something easy to believe, but something that actually changes people. And the true message of Jesus changes people. I think that what you long for is not just to be told that you're loved, but to experience that love. And when you trust Jesus, not just that he loves you, but when you trust him about the fullness of what he's done in your life, oh, your experience of his love is amazing. And that's what we want for you. So I hope that even as we walk through this and you're saying, I just hope that you'll continue to journey with us, that you'll begin to engage God in the conversation of whether or not he actually values this way, whether or not he actually loves you this way, whether or not he would actually go to that cross for you in that way. Because he loves you and he's coming for you. Because he wants to bring you home to the Father. Father, I pray that you would do what only you can do. You would open the eyes of the blind, that you would bring good news to us who are spiritually poor, that you would set us free from the lies of religion to the truth of your love. In Jesus' name.